I'd like to call this meeting in order, please. If you all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves? Director Graves?
I'm here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you very much. At this time, I call for public comment. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the board's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item at the time that item is called for discussion. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter, and any clarifying questions will go through the board. Are there any public comments? Please come up.
Thank you, President Simon. My name is Robert Leet. After last night, I want to congratulate all the candidates. I thought it was very refreshing to see really qualified, interested candidates step forth to serve this community. I thought it was great. As we move forward, I'm looking forward to working with you all. I would like to set up some time with each of you, with the staff and some of our related partners to help me get acclimated to the district and see what the issues are and how we can move forward together as a group. Anyway, I want to thank you. I appreciate all your help, but I hope I'm going to get in the future. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Before we go any farther and we get into the area reports, I would like to take a moment and congratulate the candidates who won: Kevin Graves, Chris Steele, Robert Leet. Welcome to the board, Bob, and of course you're already hearing. And I would like to say a special thank you to Mary Ann Wiesen, who's done a fabulous job. She filled in when Reed Tatro resigned and passed away. And he would be proud of what you've done. And I'm hoping that you will stay active on the board and our committees and not lose touch with this board. I'm sure I speak for everybody up here when I say we were thrilled to work with you. And
thank you.
And I thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to echo those comments also. I think that the board's moving forward, and I was certainly going to, if you hadn't said it, I was going to ask Mary Ann to be sure to at least try to stay active in the things that you enjoy, and we look forward to working with you.
Thanks, Bill. Agency reports, Sheriff's Department. There's lots of them here.
Your car's double parked.
Good evening, everyone.
How are you?
Calls for service last month, we had 383 with 47 reports taken. Calls for service went down a little bit. Looking over the stats for last month, I'm just going to say it again. I know you've heard me say this again. A lot of it's property crimes, and it's a crime of opportunity. Doors are left open, sliding wheel doors are left open. Vehicles are left unsecured, property in plain view. That's most of the property crime that you see there. And even one vehicle, the keys were left in it for the person to take down the street, so they have a better place to unload what was in the car and left the car behind. On a side note, I see the suspicious persons, suspicious vehicles, those calls are still coming in, which is good. I'd like to see an increase in that because I think that's what cuts down, and that's how we're going to deal with these other little property crime issues there. Seems to be a lot of people treating each other badly, domestics, battery, stuff like that. It's all people that know each other, obviously. And they're just up to here with themselves, I guess. I don't know. Except for that. Usually get a call after that. But the property calls, I mean, I can't stress it enough. Lock your doors, lock your windows, lock your homes, take your stuff out of your vehicle. We did have one catalytic converter that was taken from a vehicle, so hopefully that won't happen again, but who knows. Other than that, looking over that, do you guys have any particular questions?
Board, Mary Ann, anything?
No, thank you.
Bill?
No. I did notice one of your officers on election eve parked in some areas looking for folks racing to the polls, I guess.
No, not these guys.
Chris?
I just continue to ask you guys to keep an eye on our parks. I think Slifer Park and Cornell Park have some dark places, and I just ask you guys to be vigilant and keep an eye on teams that need to move along after dark.
Kevin?
I'm good. Thanks for all you guys.
Any public comment? Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. California Highway Patrol.
Hello.
How are you?
Officer Thomas of California Highway Patrol. Last month's activity we had two DUI arrests right here at Highway 4 in Discovery Bay Boulevard. We had two crashes out here. One was a school bus crash, just property damage only, we took a report on, and that was Ford Vixler, by the Safeway. We had another crash. It was Friday. It was a rain-related crash. I had bald tires went off the road. And 23 citations were written last month. 19 of them were for speed. Again, I was out on Newport for about 40 minutes. I rode two bags out there today and gave three verbal warnings. But it seems like speed is maintaining out there a little bit. You get the occasional car, but it seems like over the course of time I've been out there, people have been dropping their speed a little bit. So hopefully it's making some sort of difference out there.
Yeah, citations are down, aren't they?
It's about the same as it was last month. I think last month was 20, low 20s.
I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to.
I was just going to say maybe we could deploy our radar sign out there a couple times in the next few weeks, being the holidays are coming up.
I think a couple weeks ago I was out there at Newport and the radar trailer was out
was
there.
Was it out there? Okay. I don't get out there much.
Yeah, and those work. You know, they work pretty good. The patrol cars work pretty good.
Yes, they
do. Any comments, Marianne? Anything?
No.
Kevin?
Nope.
Chris?
No.
Public comment?
Well, maybe if you have a surplus patrol car, we could park it there.
That would be great. With our just we don't have it. Yeah. Some with 180,000 miles on it.
There you go.
Yeah. Break down to see the park.
We'll wash it.
Yeah.
We very much appreciate you taking your time to come out here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Contra Costa Fire. Chief Henderson here?
He had an emergency.
Was? And he left. All right, well then we will go to Supervisor Pifo's office.
Hi, how are you? Okay, so some good news from yesterday. Prop 1 passed, and that includes $238 million for levy work. Supervisor Pifo also met with Secretary Ross from the Food and Ag Department last week, and they are working collectively for federal funding to assist the county in combating the invasive weed issue. So stay tuned on that. And then finally, Supervisor Pifo would like to invite you to our holiday open house. That'll be on December 3rd from 4 to 6 at our office on Walnut Boulevard. Hope to see you there.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Can you go back on the weeds for a second? What's the next step with what's the supervisor with the weeds?
I'll let the weed expert
all right.
come up and
not an expert. not yet. There was a meeting last week with Secretary Ross, NASA, USDA, to get the Secretary's support in federal funding, to go after federal funding for the invasive weeds for the Department of Boating and Waterways. So she agreed to do it and is going to send a letter on our behalf, so we'll wait to hear back on the results of that. But in the meantime, there's still a lot of groundwork going on. I just met with Port of Stockton last week, so we're working it at all angles.
Was DBW in the meeting?
Yes, they were.
Very good. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, committee liaison reports. Transplan, anything? County planning? We have a code enforcement meeting?
Yes, I attended the code enforcement meeting. We really had very little. They are going to serve papers on the hoarder lady over off of Newport. And I did mention about the lady with the dog sign chained to the stop sign again. See what they can do about that.
Now she's putting it up during the day, taking it down at night, and bringing it up the next day.
Yeah, but just on the weekends.
Just on Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
Anything else?
That's it.
Yeah, I attended the Contra Costa Special District Association meeting on the 20th of October, and I was introduced into a part of the county I didn't even realize was out there. It's called the Brentwood Agricultural Land Trust, and they're working with farmers in the 20 to 40 acre spectrum to do drip irrigation and all kinds of things, and being able to give them some funding for and some tax incentives to keep those farmers from developing their property. So they're trying to maintain as much agricultural property out there. And it's been going on for about 10 years. I was clueless anyway. I had a nice discussion on that. And, so somebody's trying to keep the farmland open and available. And then they talked about something about a desalination pump to try and pull out some of the water out of the delta. So that's an ongoing thing they're trying to develop. Because one of the questions is, why don't you take, we've got plenty of irrigation water out in the delta as well, too much salinity in it. I'm not sure where that's going to go.
That's it. Thank you very much. Okay, at this time, we have a very special presentation. We have a gentleman in the house that I've not had the pleasure of meeting. And at this time, I would like to ask Kevin Graves, due to his affiliation with our Armed Services and the Joey Graves Foundation, to present to Mr. Derek McGinnis.
Come on up, Derek. So I want to take, come on over here, bud. I want to take a minute to introduce you to one of our citizens of Discovery Bay that many of you probably have not met before, but Derek and I met, gosh, probably 6 or 7 years ago when we were on a stage together in Manteca for a Memorial Day event, and then ended up being in the same businesses together and working together. And I have a little quick little bio here I'll read about Derek, but he's a good personal friend, and we enjoy working together. Derek McGinnis lives here in Discovery Bay with his wife Andrea and their three boys. Derek served in the Navy as a corpsman for 11 years. Separated from the service in the military upon successfully recovering from injuries sustained in Iraq, and severe injuries that he sustained, and he's a miracle that he's here today. Derek is a licensed social worker, and he earned his Master of Social Work as well as a Bachelor of Business in Healthcare Administration. He currently assists veterans in the Central Valley through his work with the Veterans Administration out in Stockton, focusing on finding stable housing for homeless vets. He's our homeless specialist with the VA. He's got probably a more distinguished title than that, that's how I know him. Derek has also worked at the Modesto as a readjustment counselor at the Modesto Vet Center, assisting combat vets during their transition from military service. While working with the American Pain Foundation, Derek worked for the successful passing of the Federal Military and Veteran Pain Care Act of 2007. He's an author. He's published a great book called Exit Wounds, A Survivor's Guide to Pain Management, and is often called upon to speak about the issues of pain management. Derek was featured in the Discovery Channel documentary Pain Matters. He competes in multiple endurance events and enjoys being an impact soccer coach for the American Ninjas soccer team in Discovery Bay, which is really his passion, because I can never get him on the weekends because he's always got soccer practice. I'll get you to a Cal game one of these days. Anyway, with that, I want to say that it's an honor having you in our community. We thought it would be appropriate, especially with Veterans Day coming up this month, next week, that we would show you the honor that how much we appreciate your service to your country, your sacrifice, and I know personally what you have gone through to get me here today, and you literally are a miracle, and it's just my honor to call you my friend. And so I have a plaque here for you from Discovery Bay, acknowledging your service to your country, and acknowledge you as one of our citizens that we're proud of. So,
thank you, Kevin.
Let's do this.
Thank you.
And we have a little goodie bag for you that you had some. Well, listen, we appreciate it, man. And you're a great service. Continue to serve your country. Continue to serve, as we both do, veterans. But unless you do it, you don't understand what it's like to serve those guys and to be able to give back. And especially after all you've gone through, and you're phenomenal. So thank you very much for all you do for our veterans.
Thank you, Governor.
Get the board out here. Don't go anywhere.
Roger that.
A little military carryover.
Military carryover.
Oh, I really appreciate it. It's really kind. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
My son's baby
boy.
Stan, I hope he's doing well.
Squeezing a little bit closer.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you.
Chris? All right. One, two, three.
Well, that flash, just to be safe.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Thanks for coming out. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. We'll do dinner, okay? Thank you. Okay. Well, let's see. We have a second presentation, not quite as exciting as that one. PG&E presentation on gas pipeline replacement in Discovery Bay. Staff?
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board. This came at the request a couple weeks ago. I believe it was board member Peace that asked if we could get someone from PG&E to come and discuss the project that they're currently working on the gas line replacement project. And we have Julian Laxon, and we have Rosalind Brown here from PG&E to talk about the project, what's going on, and what the status is.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
And Rosalind. So basically, how I always start to introduce these is just kind of give you a broad overview of the project, what kind of issues we're facing, and then just kind of open it up for questions. So basically, we're about two-thirds of the way done replacing over 12,000 feet of main. We are also changing out about 350 services, and how we define service is basically the line that goes from the main to your meter. That's what we consider service. We are servicing the area from on Discovery Bay Boulevard, Discovery Point, Lido Circle, and then just kind of that surrounding corner right around there. Some of the issues that we face, as some of the residents brought up to us, and I'm sure you folks, we took some of the crews away, and we were told that we weren't going to be back until January. That left, you know, quite a mess in the community. So we heard a lot of complaints, and we escalated that. We were able to get a crew back to continue the work, and that'll go on until the end of the year. Once January hits, we'll get some more crews in and keep that process going. We're looking at completing the whole project by the first quarter next year. It went over the amount of time that we told you guys, we notified you guys that it would take. The reason for that, we encountered a lot of groundwater, a lot of overgrowth made it complicated to work on the lines and around the sewer and things like that. So we do apologize about that, but we are doing the best we can. We did have to take a few crews out originally because of the Napa earthquake. We had to send them off to you so we could provide review to those folks out there. So, like I said, about two-thirds of the way done. You'll see the crew out there continuing to work until the end of the year, and we'll bring some more crews back in January. So if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, you're over in kind of my neighborhood a little bit, and I can understand the need. You have to transfer crews, emergency kind of a thing. But, and even if you have to slow down a little bit, I think the biggest concern most of the residents has is the steel plates that are left, you know, driving over them. And I don't want to tell you guys how to do your business by any means at all, but if it's more efficient to come back and finish it all off at another time, if you took the plates out and just covered everything up so the asphalt's smooth,
right?
I don't think the residents would care if you came back in January and then finished it all out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then that is a rough drive. You're talking about Discovery Bay Boulevard.
Right. Well, anywhere you're doing it with
right,
plates.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And what we're working on currently, so each one of those holes is the service tying into the main. So that's why there's all those holes. You know,
right.
That lines up with the meter. So what we're doing now is we're going ahead. We usually do the main first. We're going ahead and just working on on services right now to kind of expedite that. We did put in a request to smoothen out the cutback. That's the temporary asphalt that holds that plate in.
Yeah, make it a little longer or something.
Yeah, yeah. So we are aware of that problem. We're trying to get through that as fast as we can. In the meantime, smoothing out that cutback.
Yeah. The other issue that I see is as we get into the winter season, fog is going to start, and our streets are kind of narrow. And now we've got plates up there and banging around, and you have your equipment out there, so you might want to discuss that. I'm not saying postpone the project, but
right.
Even if your trucks are off during the holidays, but the streets are flat and level, then come back when you've do it a little quicker, a little faster, that might be an option too.
Yeah, we've definitely discussed that with the project management team, and we're working to smoothing out those plates out there and make that easier to drive on. Once the holidays roll around, we're looking to have that all squared away.
Okay.
When we had readdressed our resources, we were going to remove all the plates and close all the holes up.
Right.
We heard from several of the residents that they would rather we finish. So we rededicated the one hole, and we're trying to march down Discovery Bank Boulevard. So if something happens, let's say the weather is really, really bad, we're going to come back out, remove the plates, fill in the holes, and just leave that. But we do plan to be done with Discovery Bank Boulevard by the end of the year. Okay. So we're going to march down.
All right, thank you.
What about Discovery Point?
Oh,
sorry.
Discovery Point, Lido Circle, all the other streets, because they're smaller streets and they're off the main street, we are going to try and focus on Discovery Bay Boulevard first. So once we finish that, we only have one crew out there. In its heyday, the project had as many as 10 crews. So it was really easy to march and work and have focus in lots of areas. So with one crew, it's a little slower, takes a little longer, but it is a focus for us.
Yeah. I think the plates are the biggest issue with the residents, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the status of the high pressure line being replaced there on Bixler and Balfour? I know that's probably the most critical part of the project, isn't it, right now?
Well, that's actually a separate project.
I get it, but what's the status on that?
So we're also winding up on that too. I believe that ties in November. And we're also hydro testing. We're doing a lot of work. We're also hydro testing a line that goes and meets up at that Balfour.
Is that the main transmission line through the area, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay.
Brentwood has represented approximately $25 million of PG&E's funding this year. We have upgraded all of your valves. You have a valve on Vineyard. You have a valve on Bixler and Balfour. You have another valve that's right at that palm track or something in the back. So your three major valve systems are all been upgraded and they are now all automated.
So they can shut
all
down sections of the emergency?
Mm-hmm. So all of your pipelines, your transmission pipes that connect all those have all been upgraded and replaced. And at the beginning of last year, we did the other side of Discovery Bay Beach Boulevard, Cell Court, all of that. It was a mess. Me and Julian were here for that as well, so we did those services. And now these 300 services, just to give you a picture of what a normal distribution project looks like. Your average project is approximately 20 to 40 services, maybe 1,000 feet of main, and that takes about 2 months. It's about $10,000 a day per crew. This project is almost 350 services, 12,000 feet of main. It's probably one of the largest projects we've done in the last 5 years. Huge. So your system is going to be one of the best systems around once we finally finish. Just really cumbersome to get there, but your entire systems have been a focus for PG&E this year.
If we get into a rainy season, hopefully we will, do you anticipate a delay in completing this in the first quarter?
Yeah, rain does slow the crews down. You can't really efficiently work if there's rain. But you know, the first quarter timetable that I was given gave consideration to weather.
Okay. Kevin, anything?
Nope.
Marianne?
No, thank you.
And I'll leave my contact info to Rick. And
yeah, please.
If you guys have any other questions or even residents that come to you guys, feel free to just send them to me. That's my job. I just have to take care of notifications and resident complaints and you know, things like that. So,
is there any public comment?
I just want to update that the 18-inch main that the hydro test to Brentwood is already done. The testing is done.
Yes.
What we do is we're taking that water back into our sewer system because it's town water that went in there to test it. We'll bring it back, put it in the sewer system, and then we'll charge it back for that. that's pretty much done. They just now have to filter the water and bring it into our sewer system. And then the new gas main that they put in from Bixler going to Orwood Resort, most of that is already in place now. They even bored underneath Dredger's Cut going to Orwood Resort. That's pretty much all done. And today I noticed them putting concrete on top of the pipe where the streets cross. So that way, in case somebody came in to dig, we're going to hit soft concrete.
Very good.
The hydro test was this week.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming out and talking to us. We very much appreciate
very
it.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to the consent calendar. If there's no nothing to change on here, can I get a motion?
Yeah. So moved.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All right, business and action items. Item one, award of contract to Kaufman Associates to conduct a classification compensation study. Staff?
Oh, I
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you this evening is to, for board consideration of an updated classification and compensation study. This is routinely done approximately every 5 years or so, depending, or sooner, depending on the needs of the organization. The last time we completed a class and comp study was in early 2011. I did it using through contract using a professional personnel company or a professional person, HR manager that had retired, and we went ahead and the board did adopt that personnel that structure, which ended up resulting in all the job descriptions being the comprehensive job descriptions, the salary ranges, the benchmark positions, and that sort of thing. It's appropriate at this point in time in our about 5 years out to take another look at that. And I have solicited proposals from two different firms. One is Kaufman Associates. They are a firm that's local to the Bay Area. The other one was actually out of Phoenix, but they do a lot of work in California. And COP recently completed the class and comp study for the city or for the Mountain House Community Services District. They also do a lot of work for the city of Tracy. I checked their references. They referenced out quite well. And their principal with the firm is here this evening to answer any questions that the board may have with respect to this. The contract amount is not to exceed $14,706. The classification and compensation study would compare our current positions to current market labor rates, make sure that the job descriptions are indicative and accurate of the true jobs that are being performed, that the difference between the different employees and compensation so that they're not compacted. There's not compaction between positions, and so that's what this would lead to.
Rick, what's changed? I mean, we've done this in 2011. What's the big change that's initiating this right now? You're saying 5 years, we're only 3 years into it. What's the change?
Well, it's going to take a number of months. The board's going to be involved in the process. It's an item that is fairly standard to conduct this type of a study on a routine, on a regular 4 to 5 year basis, and that's what this would be doing. And if I could come up and address that question, because you know that part of the business better than I do.
Good evening to the board. My name is Katie Kaneko. Your question, why would you want to do this? I mean, usually organizations do it every 3 to 5 years. In 2011, you were coming off of a recession just starting to come off, and most organizations were very status quo for a number of years, 2008 We started to see some market movement. Most organizations also experience during that time hiring freezes, people assuming different roles, job duties changing. And so that's why we're finding many public sector agencies are looking to reevaluate the jobs and make sure that they're adequately looking at body of work being performed by their employees as well as ensuring they're competitive in compensation. So, you know, that's why organizations would do this.
I got to agree with Chris. I mean, we're a small district. We have very few managers, very few employees. We have job descriptions that I thought were pretty accurate. We did this in the middle of 2011. I don't see doing this now either, to be honest with you. I could be alone.
I not having been through it, but I have read most of the descriptions, and it's a pretty formidable document. I'm sure it was done professionally, and I think it's appropriate to at least take a look at what compensation we're offering our employees compared to other districts our size, and make sure that we're there so that we don't have folks get frustrated and leave. Now we've got a training issue and a mental history of how things work here. But also, if we're looking to bring someone on in the future, we want to be able to offer a competitive salary. I don't know from a salary standpoint, because I'm not in the labor market at this point, what's changed from 2011 till today. I think things will be changing. I think with the election that just took place federally, hopefully we'll have jobs created, and that's going to put pressure on us to be competitive with what we do. So I don't know about the dollars and cents. I have no idea as far as how you charge and those kind of things. Maybe you could address that a little bit. I know the number's there, but how do you get to the number, I guess, is the question. I don't know.
In determining our fee.
Right.
So what we do is we, get employees to fill out questionnaires, get a good understanding of the work that they're performing today. Our experience has been, with the recession, there was a lot of rejuggling of responsibilities. And it sounds like maybe things are very status quo here. But just making sure that they're accurate and reflective of what's going on, so there are hours spent there. Part of our approach is to make sure that it's very interactive, and that employees, there's buy-in along the way, they understand, they have a chance to review the descriptions, make sure it's reflective. And that's what we use to go to the market and look at a comparator group that's very customized to the town, and services provided in population served, in geographic region. We would work in getting board perspective as well on those that you think would be your labor market, and we provide an analysis of that as well. And then it's just getting a survey of the body of work being performed here and what others are paying in community services districts and cities that are providing similar services. And it's a tool for you to make future compensation decisions.
Yeah, how? If I could just a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. Sure. I'm assuming that you've reviewed our last document, the 2011 document.
The compensation survey,
right.
I have not.
My next question was going to be, how would yours be different, or what would be different about it?
Mm-hmm. Our approach, I will tell you, you did ask, but you don't know how the labor market has changed in the last few years. From 2008 to, I'd say, 2011-12, there were no increases being given. The market was very static. Agencies were just trying to figure out how they were going to get through the recession. We are seeing some changes. COLAs are starting to happen. Agencies are starting to negotiate contracts. On top of that, they are looking at benefits and primarily retirement contributions, and asking employees to shift some of the retirement contributions that they are paying, that the district may have been assuming, and having them pay in exchange for some sort of COLA contribution. So that's changed pretty significantly in the market. And it's every 3 to 5 years, it's probably a good idea to go out and look at whether you're paying fairly or not, and getting a sense of your compensation philosophy and where you want to be in the market, ensure that you're able to retain and attract the employees that you
are. So if your report comes back and we find that we're currently right there, then we're right there.
Then you're right there.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. First of all, there is a website for the state of California that shows you everybody's wages, mm-hmm. from no matter who it mm-hmm. is, and benefits and everything mm-hmm. is right there at your fingertips. Secondly, we belong to the CSDA, so why isn't there data and information available with them that does a comparison analysis of the entire state? And thirdly, just looking at my own history, I ran county nursing homes for over 10 years. We never hired a consultant. We did a comparative analysis just among the field to come up with the data. So, and the labor market right now, if anything, wages are lower than what they used to be years ago, because you have, my daughter being one, master's degree individuals who can't find jobs that pay more than $20 an hour. So that's my comments.
Okay. Yeah, my question for staff is why you didn't bring us proposals to make a decision on instead of making a decision and bringing us one proposal. Why didn't we get two or three proposals to evaluate ourselves and then see if we wanted to move in that direction, as opposed to you looking at two or three proposals and then giving us one to look at?
To answer that question directly, I looked at two different companies that are in the companies that work in districts and communities of our size, smaller districts, special districts, organizations are a little bit smaller, and Kaufman Associates is one, and this and the other firm, I can't remember their name, I apologize. The Phoenix are another one. They're both highly regarded firms. I felt that in this case, one of the comments I heard from the principal from the other firm was that they had so much work right now that they don't know what to do. There's overburdened. I guess right now you could probably, I don't know if it's true or not, but the industry is taking off because the economy is turning around and all these public agencies are going out and doing these sorts of things. And the report back was that, we can do it, but we don't know when we'll be able to get to you. And the references for her firm checked out very well. They're affiliated with CSDA, and thus we went ahead and I made that recommendation. Now, to answer Director Wiesen's question, CSDA does publish an annual book, if you will, of salaries and that sort of thing for all the different regions and all the different positions. They're all a little bit different, depending on where you are, what region, where you are within the region. But you can't just compare yourselves to that region, you have to compare yourselves to like organizations. There may be a very, very small, I'll use an example, Rec 800 that has two employees, where you have 14 employees, versus one that might have, Iron House Sanitary, which might have 300 employees. So you have to get the right mix. The size of the organization is really irrelevant. The fact of the matter is, our positions are portable. They could pick up and move from place to place to place, and if they end up making that decision to move from place to place because they've been portable, because of the portability of that position, Aaron, for example, could go to work pretty much any water district in the area. And if we're not competitive, if he were to leave, we wouldn't be able to replace him with good quality people. I think we built a really good team. I think it's important that we retain that team. And at the end of the day, I think this is the right thing to do. It's something that is done every 4 to 5 years. I've been involved with a number of them in my career. It's not something that's out of the ordinary. The board is involved in every step of the process. You are involved in making the decisions relative to who the comparator agencies are. You're involved in the decision making, and not one decision gets made without the input and the authorization from the board. So that's my information for you.
Number one, I agree with everything that Mary Ann said. I come from the business world. We have relatively no turnover in this. We have so little turnover here. We don't have a big employee base. We don't have dissension in our employees. Every time you've approached us for raises, for medical, for supplements, you brought us comps from every place in the world. This is what they're paying. This is what, now all of a sudden we need to do a $14,000 study to find out what they're paying. Where did you get your figures from?
Those, when we were doing the comps on the medical benefits, that was just getting comps from the agencies that are comparable agencies to us and what they're paying. So that was just a very small component of it. This is a very comprehensive, it takes a look at the entire salary structure from top to bottom.
But why? My
question is, because it requires nurturing, requires to be updated on a regular basis.
We're part of this association, right?
Exactly, and you've come to us for raises before, and you bring us comps every time we've asked, and I'm not trying to be bitter here, but every time we've given raises to the employees, you brought us everybody's figures around us. This is what this guy's making, that's what they're paying, that's what they're paying, that's what we need to start paying, and then we vote for raises. Now we're going to come back and do a study that tells us we need to do this again, and I just don't see it. And that's... I just don't see it. The rest of the board sees it, then I'll get outvoted, but I don't see it. Anyway, any other comments? Chris?
I'm going to make a motion.
Hang on a minute. Is there any public comment? Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. Uh-huh. Motion?
I'll make a motion that we put this project on a back burner and have future workshops about compensation programs.
Second that.
I have a second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Where was I? Item 2, consideration possible action on maintenance operations for zones 9, 35, 57, 61, including the hiring of in-house staff. Baron? Or staff?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, Farron will make her way to the podium. She's going to go ahead and make the presentation. This is an offshoot, if you will, of the discussion we had last year with respect to Zone 8, and it's just an extension of that discussion. And I believe that the Landscape Subcommittee has been in conversation. I know that President Simon, Director Weeds, and myself and Farron have discussed this at length on a number of different occasions. So with that, Farron?
Yeah, so we've actually discussed this item as a full board during the budget process and our workshops. It was identified during those meetings that we were at a point where we had to make a decision with Zone 8 whether we were going to keep it in-house or we were going to let staff go. There was no denying that at that point in time at the beginning of the year. I had also stated that there was some assumption that if this program went well, that we would be able to or ask to bring this back at a later time, which is now to roll into our contract from the other side since it's ending into doing this in-house as well. Some of the benefits related to the in-house, well, first of all, so far, the program with in-house maintenance has transitioned well. There's been some minor concerns that have come up, which I think we've addressed timely. There hasn't been, at least with my meetings with the Landscape Subcommittee, any huge concerns or things that were coming along. In fact, I think Mark was afraid he was going to have to tell me I told you so, and that hasn't come up yet. So so I think it's positive. We've spent, even with the time and taking over maintenance, and we've been able to spend a lot of time doing other projects still, which is one of the things I said was going to go away. We've been cleaning up the dog park. I'll show you some pictures of that today. They were still doing palm tree trimming. They're still doing irrigation repairs. They were doing planting at Point of Timber and Preston today. So we have some really effective employees who have been doing well with not only our maintenance but extra work projects. Before you tonight, again, the contract for the other zones is expiring at the end of this December. That is also, they've also exhausted two of the extensions that we've awarded them in the past. Did you have a question?
Yeah, how much money have we invested in capital improvement projects in these zones in the last 2 years? Do you know?
In 9 through 61?
Yeah.
Not off the top of my head.
Have we done any new projects?
We've done the basketball court over there. We're doing Point and Timber of Preston. We did a planting project on Preston Drive. We did a planting project on Newport Drive. We did the memorial site. There's been some projects, yes, but I don't have the number.
How do they look, you know, year after the old projects?
Preston looks great. Newport looks great. We've had a lot of difficulties with the memorial site.
One of the reasons why some of the projects, the capital projects at parks on that side of town haven't taken place is because we don't own the parks themselves. And therefore, we've been reluctant to move forward with those projects. For example, the shade structures over at Slifer and the new poured-in-place playground at Slifer Park, because of the overhead that the county charges. So we've been reluctant to move those forward until there's some resolution to that.
Is Ravenswood part of this?
Yes. So I do have updates on all of this, too, in my presentation tonight to the board on those specific items. Were you going to ask about Ravenswood, though?
Just we've got a great splash pad we can't use, and I don't see that in the budget to get that fixed. The rest of the
fixed? Yeah. I don't.
Well, getting to recirculating water and being able to use that. We spent a whole bunch of money on that thing, and I can't enjoy it this summer.
That's not by our choice.
Yeah, the recirculation project added about $250,000 to that, which is why we didn't do it. It wasn't in that zone's budget, and it won't be for a great number of years. It's just not. Okay. So this brings me tonight to talk about this, to bring this in-house. The benefits of this are not only that we have greater control over what maintenance, what priorities are, how we want our maintenance done, but also being able to take some of the financial staffing burden off of Zone 8, moving our staff around and creating a larger crew that can now move through areas that have a lot more. The landscape, actually, acreage is almost the same between Zone 8 and those zones, but you have a lot more roadway where it's going to take a lot longer to actually move your trucks, set up your lanes, continue to do maintenance on that site. So again, this would alleviate some of the burden, the financial staffing burden we have on 8, by being able to now redistribute staffing through all of the zones. So that's another benefit. We did have discussions with the county with this idea, this plan. You know, are they open to this? They have no issue with it. They'd be fine. And then again, this would also require a new truck, which I'm asking for Zone 8 to purchase it if you guys decide to go on forward with this tonight. That would be reimbursed. It's estimated to be reimbursed within a year. We charge back the county for use of our vehicles. It's $20 an hour. If you assume you spend 2,080 hours in it, you know, in a year, then it'll pay it back. So,
Karen, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
By eliminating the vendors, the current vendors, how many bodies is that we're eliminating? How many people actually?
So they have an average of 3 employees working that site, but they're not there 5 days a week. So during the summer, they're there maybe 3 to 4 days. During the winter, times like this when things slow down, they may not come out. They may do a drive-by with one employee to pick up trash, but like it's the same with us right now. We're mowing every third week. We don't have to do as much. Things aren't growing, which is why we're able to do other projects in the slow times. So that's really where our contractors make their money, is not during the summer. They lose money all summer, and then on your fall through spring is where they have the most savings.
How many employees are you looking at hiring?
2. And possibly a part-time staff for summer to help with irrigation.
And one truck period, that's it?
Yeah. It'd be 3 trucks.
Can you explain the staffing model? Because we talked about the vehicles and the staffs and how your crews would roll out.
Yeah. So during, let's just say, peak time, we'd have 2 trucks with 2 staff, one of the part-time and one full-time, both the additions. You roll those out. You have like a mow crew, you have a landscape detail crew, They have a set schedule, and actually, sorry, I don't have enough for everybody, but if you want to just pass that out, just let them see real quick. This is something I went over at the Landscape Committee. It was identified exactly what the crews were going to do. This was a mapping sequence. It takes you, it shows them, they have, my crew has copies of this. They know where they're supposed to be every single day. It identifies each area we have to take care of, the time that they have allotted to take care of those areas. So basically, right now, I have a maintenance worker one and a maintenance worker two that are in two separate trucks. And this identifies where those trucks are, when they should be there, and what they should be doing when they're there. It would be the same model, except we'd have two guys in a truck, and one would be doing a certain type of work, like maybe mowing, while the other one is edging, and then they're cleaning up together and moving together. So you'd be spending less time, but you'd be more efficient.
This is the one that Marion and I already looked at?
Yes.
Yeah. Does that did you create that, or is that
yes.
a management software that you use?
No, I created this.
And then is that a... does our contractor have that, a similar system that you manage them with?
They don't have that.
Okay.
I mean, in my life before here, I did this, and this is what I did for my crews and clients.
So, assuming that we're going to put on two people, and we're going to eliminate the one contract, we still have the contract for the palm trees, and I'm assuming...
We don't do, we have a very little portion of the palm trees that we still contract out. We do that in-house. Our guys did that this summer.
Okay.
There are 30 trees that are grown above the reach of our lift, and so that we can't reach.
What is the contract that we're eliminating, what is the total cost of the contract? If we renew?
Sorry, it's on page two there. The contractor... base is $125,886 a year.
$125,886 all inclusive?
Yes.
Okay, so for you to put on, with the truck we get reimbursed for, to put on two full-time employees, what is that going to cost us a year?
It should be 2.5. You're in your part-time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have 2.5 in there. Okay, the difference between those two, I don't have a calculator on me right now, but I think right now we're spending about $115,000 allotted to those zones anyways. So in staffing, administration costs from my point of view, from my staff's point of view, from assisting, from even our crews that work over there now. So right now we have about $115,000 we're spending on top of the contractor base rate.
Yep.
So to go to full-time staffing over there, the difference, I'm sorry, we're at 261. Minus
I'm just trying to find out how much the two employees are going to cost.
114.
With benefits.
She's given a...
I'm sorry, yeah, 88,845.
For two of them?
2.5. We have really low burden rates. Our employees are not paid
wow,
that
with all
much.
The benefits?
They're $44,000
well,
a year, including benefits?
Vacations?
That's fully
they
burden.
Take,
that's a fully
yeah.
burden rate.
Yeah.
Okay, that includes everything.
Not
it
all
includes
of our employees
salary.
Take,
it includes
yeah.
What do we give them an hour?
Yeah, I don't
it's
think
like
that.
18.
It's hourly rate. It's
what is the hourly rate?
18.
Well, that's
for one.
I'll take a more money. Okay.
Do we have
and not all of them take medical, and there's no retirement and.
Wow.
But one of the big differences is that you know the landscape companies, Odyssey is an example. They may pay their crews maybe $12-15 an hour, but they charge us a much higher
sure.
rate. So we're saving. There's some savings there that's going to take place.
So I'm looking at what you've done. I think you've done a good job in zoning. I really do. And I was skeptical when you first took it over. And I'm not thinking this is a bad idea at all either. To tell you the truth, as long again, I don't want to be. I told you so. 1-6 months down the road, I just don't want you to bite off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
This is going to be. Zone 8 is one thing, all
yeah.
the zones is another.
Well, maintenance is easy. I mean, maintenance is the same thing. You build a schedule, you work to it. Maintenance is a lot easier than doing all these other projects. And we would do the same thing we did with 8, which was start sending work outside. You know, so instead of us doing all these irrigation, although I do still want help for irrigation during the summer, but like the larger repairs or the larger projects, we would just hire those out now and we would reverse what we were doing. But this would give us a lot more control and over the maintenance that's being done, how we want it to look, where our crews go, priorities as they come up. If you called me and you're like, hey, there's an irrigation problem over here, I don't have to call, or let's say the shrubs are growing over the sidewalk, I don't have to now make an email or a call and then let them decide when that gets addressed, and they have so many days to do it. Now it just gets done. You know, hey, I have this guy here, I can remove him by the end of the day, move him out an hour early, he can get that done, you know, send to you guys. And that's what we've been doing now. One of the things that I've noticed most is like garbage and trash and weeds along the boulevard in the front entrance. While that used to accumulate and I'd constantly be saying, hey, you guys have been out there, they're on that all the time. I mean, every Monday they're out doing that, and anytime stuff, you know, over windy night or something comes back out there again. We're making sure that the areas that are most visited and most important and most high priority to us are getting addressed.
We don't have a person to do that right now in your staff?
They are doing that now. I'm talking about for zoning. For zoning, we have been able to move to that, to progress to that, to have a more individualized maintenance program that suits our exact needs and where we see problems.
Kevin, you have a question?
Yeah, Farron, as we move into replacing things as they, you know, and we move
age
towards more drought resistant,
sure,
won't that also help from the standpoint of the lower maintenance? Is there lower maintenance typically with the drought resistance type of landscaping that we need to try to move to throughout the town?
Plants, yeah. Our irrigation, no. So like drip irrigation has a lot more maintenance to it than a spray irrigation system does.
It's more efficient.
It's more efficient,
right,
water-wise. You'll
right
save more water. We're not moving towards drip. Like right now we're still using sprays, but we're using efficient nozzles. And we have systematically been going through, like for example, Zone 61, when we did the plantings on Newport and Preston, and now Point of Timber we've moved to, is we've gone through and changed all of those nozzles out. And because we're touching them, we've also replaced the whole inside of the, as preventative maintenance instead of just fixing it when it's broken.
Currently, within the zones that we're not maintaining ourselves,
mm-hmm,
who's responsible for maintaining the irrigation? Contractor or us?
They're responsible for reporting to us, and then we decide who repairs
who's
it.
Who's responsible for programming and making sure that
they are.
Okay. That's good. That's good to know. There's some out there that are pretty screwed up. I can't even remember what street I was on the other day. Oh, I was right on Newport. And that whole wall along there from where the pump is now all the way down to the next driveway, I mean, there was a stream of water going down the street, down the drain.
I heard
you. I mean, it was a river.
I got a call for that, too.
Yeah. I actually think that was something that was wrong. It wasn't a clock programming.
Well, it was,
yeah,
the sprinklers were all going,
yeah,
and there was a river going down the street.
Yeah,
and
I think it was something stuck. But yes, I'm aware. That happens, and sometimes they turn on or they're programmed wrong or the power went off and they never went back and checked it and reprogrammed it. That happens. Those things happen. Yeah.
That would be my point, is
yes,
that they're not doing. I know that's not the discussion we're having right now, but as long as we're talking, they're not doing a good enough job in regularly checking the program to make sure that maybe once or twice, I don't know how often it needs to be checked, if it needs to be checked at the end of every day, or what has to happen, but I'll tell you what, when that happens, we all get phone calls.
Yeah.
From people saying, what are you guys doing? We're in a drought. Why are you watering for 3-6 hours on this one?
Yeah, right now our contractor, typically, and they're not here, I can't speak for them, but they have to give me a report based on our contract dates during the summer. That's every 6 weeks. So they're looking at a clock every 6 weeks during the summer. During the winter, they don't look at it. They do one in November, and they don't do it again until March when we turn back on the water. But I don't expect them to. We're not watering. You know, it's not necessary. As far as them reprogramming, it's probably a lot less often than they're checking it. Reprogramming is typically seasonal, maybe three times during the year.
I'm talking about checking to make sure that the program is working properly.
I don't think that
whether
happens
it be
as
from
often
a power surge or whatever creates the situation where sprinklers go for hours at a time.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that happens as often as inspections happen. So I can't.
Okay.
Just from experience with that field before, it's usually about 3 times a year it gets changed.
Something's got to be pretty bad for me to notice it when it comes to landscaping. That's all I'm telling
you. I think that everybody feels, we just don't want you to spread yourself so thin that you're here instead of being here. And I mean, this is going to change your job considerably.
But
I actually think it's going to make it more efficient.
I I think it's a good idea.
I think it's a good idea, too.
I think it's going to make it more efficient. There's going to be economies of scale that we don't have right now, because if we need to redeploy somebody on that side of town, we can redeploy a full force. If we need to redeploy a full force over here to fix something, we can do that too. But we don't have that flexibility
just
right now.
Just because our zones are separate right now.
Everything's separate.
That's the only reason that's driving this whole conversation right now, right?
Well, the funding that comes into that is separate. They all pay different amounts.
I don't know how we're going to manage the quality if with our existing contractors. How can we handle more management of if we're not even checking our sprinkler timers on the rail? We don't audit our contractor, that I understand. And it seems like these things, there's a lot of moving pieces, and I just don't understand how we can manage the quality of our landscaping. And I like the redeployment idea, but I just don't, you guys haven't shown me the system how it's going to work that easy. You know, I get the efficiencies of saving a dollar, but I don't see how.
So we have 66 clocks in town, and about 7 of those are online. I don't even know if this is information that you want. I just, really, there's a difference between, like, you telling a contractor, hey, I think there's a problem, that you're over-watering. I saw this on a clock. Why are you watering 5 days? Because that does happen. Like,
you meet
I do
every week,
see,
right?
I'm sorry?
You meet every week with our contractor, right?
No, we don't meet every week. I see their field crews all the time, but I don't meet with their management.
I thought when we had our crews, we had our new contracts, we were going to meet regularly.
We did when there were issues, and because there were issues, but there haven't been, and so we end up having a lot of field interaction, but not management interaction. But for example, with your clock issue there, training our staff to handle that, and then going out and programming, so instead of you just saying, well, check it, did you audit it, now we're responsible for it. It's not just me being responsible for it, it's training our staff to become responsible for it, to be able to identify, hey, I drove by and there was a puddle or there was water in the sidewalk and I'm going to get out and go check that. They own it, they're here, they don't leave, they have a seal on their chest that says Discovery Bay, that's their responsibility. I know they feel that way with the quality of work they're doing now. You know, their face, their name is out there. We would own that work at that point in time. You know, it's not a contractor who goes home, we don't know his name, we don't, you know, there's some ownership with that.
All right. Thank you.
Question? Yeah, I looked on page 99 of your operation and cost, in-house versus contract, and it appears that at the end of the day, there's probably a savings of about $34,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Question that I have, we're being reimbursed from the county for the services that we're providing and monitoring, be it our in-house people or the contractors, etc. If we can do this more efficiently, is there a risk that our reimbursement from the county would go down, so that, you know, we're budgeting to hire 2.5
people? The
reimbursement
from the county's actual cost. So no matter what happens, whether it's now or in the future, we're always going to get reimbursed for what actually happens there.
Right.
So they don't, I mean.
So what's the savings?
Plus we can have a reserve.
Well,
no, it goes into
the savings.
Well,
I mean, a lot of the savings now between the differences and what I was trying to explain at the beginning is that we are paying a contractor base. Plus, on top of that, we already have a lot of administration of costs of our own and staffing costs of our own. So right now, we have 125 base contract plus about 100 and a little over 115,000 that we expend there for our staffing costs and their staffing costs. Moving that forward, you're going from 243 a year, our staff, their staff, to 206 a year with just our staff.
Well, we're getting fully reimbursed by the county for this.
Yes.
Whatever price structure.
Except for Zone 9. I mean, Zone 9 is ours, and that's set to, Zone 9 is set to, show about 17,000 difference. That's huge for Zone 9 because right now I think we're expending more than we're bringing in there.
So the end result would be, if I understand the proposal, that we would gain 2.5 more people into your work group, and we'd be able to have much more flexibility for whatever needs to be done. We can move 4 over to one area, keep 2 over here, whatever. So you have more flexibility in assigning the work that needs to be done. We can respond faster to issues that the community has or the board has, because we don't have to go through the chain of command of the contractor. And the dollars and cents are going to stay in line, so we don't have a budget issue per se.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of being able to keep up with the mowing, the fertilizing, and the fixing. And
yeah.
And it's your recommendation that 2.5 people, half during the summertime, should be able to handle this. And the end result, the town will be in a better maintenance position landscape-wise if the board agreed to your proposal.
I think it's a win-win on both sides, not just maintenance, but financially. I did want to mention, Vice President Steele, that I know you had some recent concerns about inspection reports. There was some items he found at one of our parks that should have been noted. It wasn't in my staff's inspection route to inspect these items, but because of the concerns and because it came up, because a lot of times we rely on our contractor communication, we have made changes to those reports and those inspections so that they are our staff is now responsible for a greater amount of the inspection and not just relying on hoping that information comes in. So I thank you for the input.
Just one final question, and this is in the staff summary. It mentions in here that you put together an operational budget comparison related to maintenance services only.
Yes.
So what other expenses or services would there be?
All of the capital projects. And I will give you an update on those again at the end of or when my presentation comes up on that. But that's just capital. I didn't include any capital
in that. All right. Yeah, that's a separate item.
Yes.
Maintenance contracts don't do
it has nothing to do with that. Yeah. It's just I kept all that out.
Any other comments from the board? Any public comment? Galen, come on up.
Hi, Galen Ziegler, chair of the Landscape Committee of Lakeshore. We have Cleary Brothers as our landscaper, and I think some of the problems that we have with contractors is the same as Farron's describing, where we know the problem with the sprinkler controller or some such thing. We don't get them out there right away because they have other jobs to do. Not that I want to have in-house staff in our homeowners association, but you know, that is part of the issue, I think, that could be addressed by having in-house staff. The cost savings would also be welcomed by your residents in Lakeshore, because we and the other Hoffman villages pay for Zone 61. It isn't the county. It's our money that we pay. So it's a potential, at least, to reduce our assessments in the future if costs are actually reduced significantly. As it is, we've got $1 million in reserves, and that doesn't seem to go down any, but I know we have a lot of capital improvements that are in the works. But when you talk about it's somebody else's money, it's some of your residents' money, as soon as it is. Thank you.
Okay. We need a motion.
Move staff recommendation. Baron is done with the presentation.
Do you
want to hear me talk more?
I'll second.
Not now that you've got the motion.
No, we think we know where it's
going. I'll second the motion.
We think we know where it's going.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, Baron.
Thank you.
We made it easier on you.
Good job.
What do you think you did?
She was going to filibuster for 3 or 4 hours. Okay, let's see. Where are we at now?
That's a pretty good filibuster already.
Wasn't bad. Okay, informational items. Item one, final fiscal year 2013-14 annual budget, fiscal year 14-15, and fiscal year 15-16 operating capital and revenue budgets. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As I am scrolling through that right now, page 105 of 190 of your electronic agenda packet, in case you were curious.
Where is it? What page?
Page 105 of 190 of your electronic.
You find a page
it shows it at the very bottom right hand corner when you scroll up and down.
Can
you move your finger up and down?
This is going to be one. It happened to be right there.
Oh, there's one. What'd you say, 105 or
105?
105.
I found it.
Touch it.
All right.
Unless you'll take model 8.
We can start the meeting. I found it.
Thank you. This is just the final version of the budget that was adopted by the board back in June. I made a brief presentation. President Simon, you were not at the last meeting, so we carried it over and rolled it over for your behalf.
Thank you.
Essentially, at the end of the day, at the end of the fiscal year, we were able to contribute a little under $350,000 into our general reserve account. And that's in spite of, during the course of the year, the board will recall that we brought a couple of projects to you that were not budgeted. One, I believe, was, if you recall, that rotor shaft down at the ox ditch severed. There was a screen that was purchased, totaling about $150,000. And at the time, I indicated that we would wait and see if we needed to do a budget amendment later on down the road, if the current budget could absorb it. Happy to say we absorbed it and was able to contribute $350,000 into reserves. That box that you see there on the agenda packet gives you pretty much a breakdown of where we are and what our reserves are, what our budget was. And all this does is, now that the county's closed out their budgets or their books and we've closed out our books, it gives us the opportunity to finally publish the final document with actual numbers, and that's what you have this evening. Unless the board has any questions, that's basically all we have on this item.
I have none. Any questions? Marianne?
No.
Chris?
No.
I'll pretend Kevin said no. He's not here.
I would be remiss if I didn't thank Dean and her staff for all the hard work and
doing that.
I really had nothing to do with the budget this year. She kind of kept kicking me out of the room when I was trying to get involved, so she did a great job.
I would just like to comment that having a $350,000 reserve contribution from a board standpoint is very good, much better than taking $350,000 out of reserve to balance the budget.
Absolutely.
Very good.
There was a point we were a little concerned about that, to be honest with you. There was we were getting to the end of the fiscal year, and we were a little concerned that we weren't sure where we were going to end up at, and we were very pleased once we counted up all the dollars to see where we ended up. So thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Let's go into item. We're going to have to get back out of here again. I'll just read it off here. Community Center Expense Report, item 2.
This is the Mark Simon. What do you call it, Mark?
He wanted it to be a P&L.
Profit and loss statement, yes. I'm getting to the page, so bear with me for a second here. I'm sorry.
169.
Create a real profit. So I did a budget versus expenses. Just because it's not an actual
budget. Yeah. Just call it an expense statement.
Yeah, it's really not a.
Yeah, it's definitely not a profit loss.
No,
there's nothing about this that looks like a profit loss.
No, it's the budget versus actual.
So yeah. We're
and this is really the
question. Okay. This is starting at page 169. We blew it up for you. It's this 11x17 sheet. This is our current fiscal year from July 1 to June 30, where we stand relative to our budget and relative to our actuals through September the 30th, so through the first quarter. When you talk about a profit loss, it's not really a profit loss, because you can see under the revenues, we have a whole bunch of different revenues. We've got swim team revenues, we've got rental revenues, we've got community center apparel, all the way down the list, advertising revenues. And we also have Zone 8 revenues, which is the $217,000 at the top of the line there. So we take those revenues, and that's what our budget is going forward at the beginning of the fiscal year. And so we know what our budget is, $295,109. And we know what our expenses are. If you go down to the very bottom of the first left-hand column of that page, you see $295,109. So you go to the middle column, it shows you what we spent from July 1st through September 30th. Now, you got to remember that the pool will now have been closed after September 30th, so we'll get some of our pool revenues early on, and we'll get some, we'll get some a little bit more as we get later in the season. We'll have our programming revenues that come in. And the right-hand column is what's remaining. And if you do the math, we're about 25% through the year, which is about right through the first quarter.
Correct, that is 20%.
Okay, so so this shows you where we were for the first quarter of this year relative to budget versus actual from a line item. From each of the revenues, where the money's coming in, how much revenue's been brought in. You can see the community center for the pool. Pool fee, $7,500. We brought in $4,700. Now, okay, the summer's over, but we still have May and June next year to make up the difference. So we were hoping that we actually did a little bit better than we thought that we would at that time. So that's what this piece of information provides for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
How does the salary and wages work on that? And what is that? Does that include full time or what is that?
Salary and wages includes any costs associated that are allocated to the community center. That would include Farron and her staff that's allocated. It would include temporary part-time staff that's allocated. It would include lifeguards. It would include, does it include the instructors? That's a different.
What's the allocation for Farron? I mean, what is the allocation?
It's based on my actual hours.
It's based on actual hours.
What is the percentage?
It's based on actual hours.
I know versus her full load. Is it 30%?
I think we did 15% was what we budgeted.
Last year it was a lot higher.
So
that's Dan, too?
Yeah.
Dan's in that lump sum?
Yeah,
last
Dan's
year. 100%.
He's
a lot of full-time.
Yeah.
What about the gal?
Monica's 50-50 with water, wastewater, and zone, and all of recreation, all of the parks, landscape, recreation, and a portion of hers is allocated to recreation.
Okay.
It would include lifeguards. It would include swim team instructors for the swim team that we pay for. Out of revenues that we collect, you see $32,000 that we get from the swim team. So that comes out of there as well.
Cool.
We're going to give you this quarterly as we do our financial reports. If you recall earlier in the agenda on the consent calendar, the quarterly financial statement was on there. It's been a while since you had a quarterly financial statement because of the budget. And so we're getting that back on track now for you on a quarterly basis. So we will be giving you that and this on a regular basis. I also hand it out to you. I believe it's paperclip.
Yeah, this one.
It's additional materials for each two.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the first page, it should say October 2013. If you recall back last year, we had Bartlewells give us a five-year community center forecast, cash flow forecast. And in that forecast, at the end of the five-year period, it was estimated that we would have $369,000 in Zone 8 fund balance remaining. After expenses and after revenues, and once you throw everything in and it falls out. This was prior to the board's authorization to spend the $80,000 or thereabouts at the community center, okay? So if you look at the second page, I had Allison from Bartlewells update this for us. And we've gone from 369 to 251, but the majority of that is as a result of the those capital projects that took place. And so what we did is I want to go over this sheet with you because it gives you a really good indication of what we're doing right now in 14-15. Last year was more of an estimate. We actually now have true numbers and exactly what it is we're doing. So you can see our assessed income. We were supposed to be at 421,000 starting fund balance. We actually started out about a little over $517,000. We had, I don't know if you recall, a number of years ago, the state came in and raided a number of public agencies and they stole our money. It was called ERAF, and the ERAF share. Well, we finally got that paid back this year, and so it got allocated back to us. So that got put back into our account. We also got a little bit more. Do you remember what the dollar was from 460 to 480 or so in property tax numbers? 478? So we had a little bit more in property tax revenues as the economy's improved and property taxes have increased a little bit. We got a little bit more of a bump there. Our community center revenues, however, were actually pretty on target from what we thought we would do to what we're doing. I did not have her include the swim team revenues because that's a straight in out. It's a pass in, it's a pass out, and none of the costs that are included in here are swim team. Those are a separate line item, and so we track those while they come into the town and they come into the budget. They also go out pretty much the same way they come in. So what comes in goes out with respect to the swim team.
Rick, does the 251.6 take into account the 50 grand we're about to spend on the pool?
Okay, so when you look at the under the revenues in the top half of the page, you can see there's a grant there for $65,000. It is
on page two.
Yeah, are you looking at the one? It says table 6A.
Yeah.
Okay. Under zoning revenues, it'd be the fourth line down. It says grant.
Yeah.
Okay, $65,000.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's a WW grant for the tennis courts. And if you recall, we exceeded that by another $23,000. Yeah. So drop down to the next line item. And that, those revenues are the $50,000 for the renovation of the replastering of the swimming pool, mm-hmm. plus the balance of the tennis court work.
Okay.
So we actually budget the revenues as an in, and then we also show it coming out on the bottom. And so on the expense side, under capital, the $138,000 is $65,073. Okay, so those two add up. Okay. So at the end of the five-year forecast period, we're looking at, assuming, you know, this, we made some modifications under new development revenues. We had money coming in 14, 15, and 15, 16, and that just isn't realistic. Pantages and Newport Point won't be building, we won't be getting any money from them in the next few years, so we pushed it out two more years. And that still may be a little aggressive, but we were somewhat cautious. With that, so moving forward, we're looking at $251,000 at the end of the next five-year forecast period, the remaining Zone 8 fund balance. And if you draw down over $30,000, $35,000 a year, you could probably go another 8-9 years beyond this with the same type of operation. You know, we do run it, as you know, very efficiently. We try and be as cost efficient as possible. We try and do as many things respectful of the dollars, making sure we get good bang for our buck, but that we don't also overspend on certain things as
How
well.
How do you know that Zone 8, I know you're making progress with the county on these zones being all consolidated, but you really think 2019 we're still going to have Zone 8? Is that really what the progress is?
Zone 8 will always exist. The reason being is because Zone 8 is not a, it's not a Prop 218 zone. Zone 8 is a original pre-Prop 13 taxing zone. So when you see your property tax bill for this part of Discovery Bay, you will see Town of Discovery Bay. We call it Zone 8 just because it's a carryover from the M8 days. But the fact of the matter is, it is still part of the original 1% of the pre-Prop 13 days because it was in existence prior to that. So that will always stay unless there's a change in the state constitution.
Charge everybody else to do outside Zone 8. Huh?
The other zones that are Prop 218 zones, that's a different ballgame. So, yes.
Thank you.
What, on the reserves for Zone 8, at one point we had what, $700,000 or so in there, or roughly $1 million or something like that. So if we, and we're forecasting out here to, at 18-19, we're going to have $251,000 left. And just subtracting the budget numbers, we're going to contribute $81,000 next year to the community center out of those reserves. The next year, $69,000, $48,000, $38,000, and as the manager said, we could deplete it, but we don't want to deplete our reserves. So how do we get to a point where we can put some money back in the reserves? Where is it that, when do we see the light at the end of the tunnel where the community center gets close to breaking even?
That's an excellent question, and it's one that this board's going to have to tackle at some point in the relatively near future and in the relatively next couple of years at the latest. The original number, remember, had money in it for the purchase of the center, so right. We pulled that $200,000 off, and so you know where the money's gone. It hasn't been spent in an inefficient manner. It's been spent for good things. But there is going to have to come a point in time when this community is going to, when this board is going to have to figure out a way to support itself, support the community center, through some form of an assessment, through some form of reshuffling the deck between all the other different zones in town, creating a master zone. That's what we're working with on the Pantages and Newport Point pre-annexation agreement, so we can get some of those monies out of that to help support that as well. And if you recall, one of the things that it's more of a capital item, but is Pantages is committed to $2,500 per dwelling unit. But that's, you know, when they pull building permits and that's going to happen. That's
three
more
to five,
capital
three
item.
To 5 years down the road, capital stuff.
We're still waiting for reimbursement, right? From Shoffman?
Yeah, we are, but there's actually starting to be a little bit of movement on that. So,
well,
I think that Mr. Hoffman is, from what I understand, is desirous of moving forward, but it all involves a lot of well.
Do you see charging for services for everything at the community center at some point, and just making sure that people use it, pay for it, or how do you?
Well, we already charge for services.
Dog park's free, right?
I think that, yeah, I don't think that you can charge for all your services. I mean, community centers, you and I spend a lot of time in a lot of the neighboring communities with their different community centers. And a lot of the programs are, you pay to play. But there's a lot of them, you go in, you can sit down, you can play cards, you can log onto the internet, kids can do their homework. So those should always be free services that people can participate and use. And there should always be some form of classes that are made available or some forms of programming, I should say, that's free of charge.
What I'd like to do, the reason I mentioned that is I just wanted to make sure that the board understands that it's bleeding and we've got to solve it. So what I would like to see at some point down the road when staff feels comfortable that we at least start some initial brainstorming or concept ideas or something along that line, that we look out into the future and some of the things that you probably have thought about but we haven't had a chance to talk about yet.
Well,
as
you recall, we do at the beginning of the year, it's already on the agenda, it's on my list of items to discuss with you at our planning session at the beginning of next year. So you'll be talking about it sometime in January or February.
All right.
At least from a conceptual standpoint. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? How do you want to get there?
Well, I think the other thing, going back long before your time, and this is not a mystery. We knew going in that we never approached building a community center because we couldn't serve Sedona. We knew that. And we knew it would take an assessment to make that happen, and the assessment's not going to happen, especially now that you've already built it. When you open a community center and people are already using it, and then you ask if they want to outpay for it, their answer is going to be, oh, hell no. So knowing this, going in that we want to open this, that's why I keep asking the question, how much a month are we losing in it? Maybe it's time to sit down and look at where can we generate some revenue from. We just can't sit two more years. We're going to take losses monthly that we shouldn't be taking. We're taking its residents' money that we're losing. It's not ours. So to me, to sit out another couple years, couple 3 years, and start talking about finding a source of revenue.
Well, we have the schedule of how quickly we're running out of money.
5 years.
We just looked at, well, no, in 5 years we'll be at $251,000.
Well, we've depleted $750,000.
But we're not losing their money. We're giving them a service. They're paying for a service. That's what they're doing through their tax dollars, through their rate payments, through the current tax structure that they have on their rolls. They're paying for a benefit that they get to use. It's not like, you know, we're not throwing their money away.
In a form we are, in a form we're not. But at the end of the month, it costs us money to run the community center that we're not recouping.
We're spending $18,000 a month on money that we're not bringing in.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm not against that.
Don't get me wrong.
I love the community center.
Yeah, it's $18,000 a month. It's that number at the top of the page, $217,009, that comes out of Zone 8 reserves.
I think the thing that I'm saying, Rick, is that I don't have an issue with it.
217,000 divided by 12.
I don't have an issue with the community center. I think we need to sit down before 2 years is up and try and find some kind of a revenue source and see if we can maybe cut that 18 down to 12. Or
we
maybe
can curb
down
completely.
If it's possible. I mean, I don't think we're never going to make a profit.
That's the type of conversation that I will
I can tell you together in January.
I can tell you, Bill, from your previous experience in your prior community that you served in, Parks and Rec programs, police services, fire services, they don't pay for themselves.
Oh, I understand totally.
You are never going to get full cost recovery. It is a subsidized service.
Correct. But my concern is that in the long run, even if we shook $35,000 a year out of 257, that's 7 years and that reserves are gone.
So we can do an action item on this right now. We can just make a decision right now.
We need to let staff have time to come up with stuff, and we're going to have a brainstorming session in January.
For 3 minutes?
No.
Oh, it's been an hour.
Yeah.
We need to find a way to move this forward.
We're not going to do that at one of these meetings.
There's no action tonight. This is just informational for the time being.
Yeah. But I mean, again, Rick, don't get me wrong. I understand it's going to be a loss. I don't have a problem with it being a loss.
It's not a loss. It's a service. The community's paying for the community center. That's what that $217,000 is the community paying for the community center.
Okay. But we have $18,000 a month. That we put out.
Well, that's this. That's the same number.
That we don't get back.
No, right. Because they're paying for the benefit of having a community center in their community, which is what they told us they wanted for the last 15 years.
Right. The point is, when are we gonna run out of money if we don't come up with a strategy?
Well, it's very obvious.
Right. So that's all we want to have is a discussion on the strategy.
But rather than say we're losing let's look at what it really is. What we're losing is the difference between 436 and 369 over 5 years. So we're losing about $110,000 in reserves over 5 years. That's what we're losing, not $217,000 a year.
I didn't say we're losing
$217,000. Okay, well, $18,000 a month is $217,000 a year.
That's the Zone A contribution to that.
But that does bring back into the play, eventually that's going to diminish, and we need to stop the bleeding. There's no question about that.
That's all I'm saying.
Stop the bleeding. Right. I'm not, but I don't want to.
I call it a loss, you don't call it. To me, when you're bleeding, I call it a loss.
Well, they're two different numbers. This number and this number are two different things. What we're talking about is the diminishing reserves that are occurring here in this chart here. And we want to stop that because we want to, as Bill said, we want to continue to maintain reserves. And we're not going to do that if we continue in the same direction.
That's the point.
And it doesn't take a lot to stop that bleeding. We're only bleeding to the tune of, what is it, Rick, $30,000 a year or something like that?
$1,000 a month.
Yeah.
When you look at the chart?
Can I comment? I'm sorry. Yeah. Just on that part.
Well, I was going to say, these two, I hear from these two what you're saying. And we know that this is important. We know that it's critical and that it needs to be addressed.
Well, we'll have a study session.
That's
all
I'm sure
the entire
like that.
Board's
aware
of it.
All
right, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I was just going to comment that I can't address the whole dollar amount that's coming out of aid to support the community center, but that deficit, that $20,000 to $30,000 that we're losing each year out of reserves. I think that right now, with what we're doing at the community center, is trying to focus on offering classes that are a little bit more successful. Again, I'm going to get up and talk about this in a minute, but right now we're only having 30% of our classes go. So trying to reach out and do more outreach onto what classes and what people will come for at what times on what days, so we can get a higher participation rate. That would bring us, that would bring in
sure.
that different money. If we could just.
That's what we're all asking for.
That's our plan on our side. Just to, but right now we're just forecasting with how it's been going. And that's our mark right now.
To me, it's a proactive approach to cutting.
Yeah.
What we're bleeding. That's
yeah.
That we're all saying the same thing in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, if we can get to a point where we can cut that in half.
Yeah. I mean, we're working what we can to help with the reserve, losing the reserve so that Zone 8 doesn't run out of money. There's still that overall 200,000, $180,000 that's coming out of that we'd like to, alleviate so Zone 8 can build up reserves and have projects to, I don't want to say Zone 8, it's all in Zone 8, but landscape and parks can have money again.
We're all on the same page here. Okay, we have nothing else there. Let's move to the director's comments. Marianne, anything?
I do. I just want to let everybody know that Virgil is going to be Santa Claus on the 15th at the end of the Festival of Trees. All the trees are set up, so I certainly hope that each of you will take the time to go over and see the trees. And 20% of the revenue from those trees is going to the community center and or the dog park.
Excellent. Bill, anything?
No, Kevin.
Yeah, I usually get off the hook because Q usually gives my report for me, but since he got called away on an emergency today, The East Contra Costa Fire Protection District, we met on Monday. The only thing of real note is that they have definitely moved to go, they have definitely voted to move to go ahead with the benefit assessment. It's done. It's going to happen. It's going to be on schedule. Other than that, the only other issue is that the Knightson, the Knightson fire station is temporarily closed.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. It should open up here in the next couple of weeks again. They had a sewer and water issue there, and they had to close that. They had to close the fire station down, but it will be back. It's just a temporary closure, and it should be back open soon. But that does affect us from the move-up standpoint and availability of nearby engines, and that's about all I got.
Thank you. Chris?
I don't have any director's comments.
I have nothing. General manager's report.
Well, before we go to general manager's report, we've got a manager's report.
Oh, I said...
Sorry. I got to talk again.
You get to listen to Ms. Farron again.
Okay, so there are a number of things I said I was going to talk about again. First of all, in the community center, I'm going to go over as fast as I can update on the community center, parks and landscaping. With the community center, I'm passing out a spreadsheet, or just some, I guess, an informational sheet. This gives you a programming overview of what we're looking at over the last two sessions. We didn't include fall because we haven't completed them. There's a number of classes that haven't gone yet, so we felt that it was a little premature to start putting numbers in there. Right now, like I was mentioning, our cancellation rate is approximately 70% of our classes are not going. This is due to low registration numbers. We are getting registration in most classes, at least 1, 2, 3, but it's not enough to make it worthwhile for the instructor to hold the class, so we've had to cancel them. Our most popular classes are listed here, the top six. River Otters by far has been number one, just because we had 90 participants, we had a wait list. They were a huge success for that swim team for first year.
Is that an annual,
yes.
All-round swim team?
Well, no, not year-round. It begins in April. So practice begins in April. I think their first meet's in May, and then they end in the end of June, and some of them go on through July if they meet the
championships or whatever.
Yes, uh-huh. Outside of that, Zumba and soccer are close second. They both, all of their classes that we've had, Zumba's done a number of classes, not just one session. Like for example, for right now, she has a Tuesday and Thursday night class, and those are different classes. Both of those go. Our soccer classes, even though it just says kids love soccer, there's pre-soccer, there's mommy and daddy soccer, there's advanced, you know, there's multiple classes, and all of those classes have gone. We haven't canceled any, so those are both very successful programs. One of the most popular right now during fall, again, soccer, but also the art classes. That teacher there is excellent. She's got quite a following now, and parents are sharing that, so we are seeing the participation rates go up into fall, especially in the classes that have been consistent and word's been able to get out about them. The swimming pool information over the summer, we sold 2,701 entries. Those are individual entries for the day. We sold 67 passes. I didn't break it down on like families and individual, but 67 total. And then again, we had 90 participants in the River Otters, and that was the total amount of fees that they brought in for sponsorships and swim fees. Below that are just classes that we're not offering again from fall, going into the next one, I'm sorry, into our next session. Classes we're not offering again, and the new classes that you'll be seeing in the winter guide. Are there any questions on that before I? Sure.
I do. I just, how is the feedback, and how are we surveying our town as to what they like to have? Or have you guys talked to the Mommy and Me clubs? Have you talked to the PTAs?
Yeah, no, that's something that I've been working on down with. It's actually, he hasn't yet. It is something on our goals list. It is a priority. He's spent a number, I think, of months of getting acclimated to the position. And the day-to-day operations and running the easy facility and updating and learning the instructors. So I think he's kind of to that point now where we're focusing the priority more on outreach. And so, yes, that is coming up, but no, it has not occurred. We do talk to the parents that come in there. We're very social. I don't say me as much, but Monica and Dan are very social. When anybody's coming in to register, they talk, how did it go? We have fielded concerns. We've heard lots of positive information as well. So
I'd like exit comment cards on all of our activities, and it would be nice to have comment cards at the counter and that we push them out to people.
I
haven't seen any feedback as to the interaction.
We haven't done that, but it is on a goal. Like when we were going through what like Brentwood, for example. Brentwood, at the end of every class, requires their instructors to turn in or to pass out and collect back a evaluation before they get paid. And that is probably somewhere we'll go to. We're just kind of moving baby steps here, trying to get it rolling. But absolutely, we want to hear the feedback as well.
How's Dan working with the other communities around here on their park and rec programs?
I know he's done several reach out, mainly just Brentwood and Oakley. Oakley a little bit more because they seem to be more responsive. They're a little bit smaller, maybe not as busy. I don't know, but they tend to respond. He's also been attending CPRS events for our region and doing some networking that way.
These are great classes.
Yeah.
On the classes, on the form that you have, you've got registration fees in winter, spring, roughly $20,000, and summer going to be for fall, whatever, $22,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's being retained by the town, or is that total fee?
So for our first year, no. So that's the total fees. Our portion of that is 20%. 80% goes to instructors.
Right.
Now, we did that for the first year as an introductory. That is not typical of splits. Most splits go anywhere from 25 to 40% that stays with the community. Because we were trying to build a base and get instructors out here, we did offer a better percentage to them starting in winter, starting on the next session, that we're moving up to 75%, 25% that will stay with us. So we're trying to take that in baby steps as we didn't really have much to offer them. I mean, they had to build their own classes. We're doing a lot of it wasn't aware. So
And I understand that, and I don't have any problem with that, but I guess what I would like to see is when you put the dollars and the cents and these kind of things, if you could show, here's our total fees and here's what was retained.
Sure.
Yeah. That way the board kind of sees, here's money we're getting, and that's going to help us understand the offset we're trying to do with the reserve and things.
Yeah.
It'd be the same thing on the River Otter fees at $33,000. I know that was all here, but how much did we spend on the River Otters versus what the fees were? Did we make anything on the River Otters?
No.
Right.
No.
But
in and out.
In and out.
Will it be in and out forever?
No.
No.
Okay. All right.
There were a lot of startup costs this year.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. And just that $22,000 again is only represent, like, if you're looking at summer 2014, the total registration fees we collected, that's only representing again 29% of the classes that we held. So all, like, really what our goal is to try to bring that revenue and the percentage we get to keep up is to increase those classes, and then at least the ones that go. So total participation. Any more questions on this? Okay. Tennis court repairs. Here's some pictures behind you. The upper left is the beginning, the first phase of the asphalt repair on courts 1 and 2. They covered the cracks. That was a sticky, fabric substance that went over the top. It was so completely covered the large cracks. What you see on the right top is their asphalt truck coming in. They put there's actually a fabric roll that they place down, and then that truck is spreading like an asphalt. I don't even know the right word, but it drove through. It was really neat to watch. It all happened at once. There was a rolling back. It went down, and then they came and paved over that. So you see the bottom paving here. The courts on the right are completed. Those are courts 5 and 6. So 5, 6, 7, 8 are all done painting. Courts 1 and 2 are still unpainted, are starting. And then some windscreens, and so the final touches. So basically they have 2 courts and final touches on the windscreens. And they should be wrapped up within the next 5 days.
Okay.
So are our tennis players happy?
Yes. Yes. Oh gosh. I have to mention that the Discovery Bay Tennis Association, or the former Discovery Bay Tennis Association, donated $4,900 to us to finish screens and posts that we could not replace in our budget. So, yay.
That's how happy they are.
Yeah.
I say they're happy.
Show me money and they're happy. And actually, I've gotten a couple phone calls and they're very pleased with the effort that we're putting forward and that they have no...
We're telling them we're not ignoring them. We just got to get to them.
Is there any more issues with the locked gates and going around
yes.
and snap
yes.
food?
Well, right now we're kind of leaving it as is, but when I guess maybe that's a good part to roll into right now is that Chris has brought up having a community center workshop on some items that maybe need to be discussed in more detail. Those might be our volunteer policies, also how we're going to operate our grounds entries at the community center. There are some things that we really need to decide and kind of discuss maybe further. And so
why don't we put a workshop together?
Yes, and that's the idea. And just if you guys have items that want to go on that you can send off to Rick so we can start preparing that. But those are the two big ones that I'm aware of that need to be discussed.
I didn't see any tennis or racket programming at all. I don't know why we haven't don't have any racket events or activities on this programming sheet. We do.
They're just not popular.
I don't see this. Anyway, it'd be good.
There's a number of kids' tennis courses out there.
It's not in the programming guide.
Yeah. We have tennis 101. We have tennis stars.
Okay, I didn't see it. Okay.
This is just a summary of the top classes. And the ones that didn't happen again. But tennis is happening. They've had more participants, but they're low participation.
It didn't make the top six.
Why are the top classes not happening again? Like Matt Pilates. Pilates is a top class, and it's not happening.
Well, she is. She's changing what she wants to have. So it's not. So it's
Pilates Bar Fusion.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
That
so
would be my
they're
question.
they're
Why
rotating.
Is Pilates Bar Fusion more popular than Matt Pilates?
Because they offer drinks.
Oh,
it's Fusion. I get it.
At the bar.
Can't beat that.
I want to sign up for that.
Yeah, get right down to your alley.
Or the word bar. Okay. All right, let's move on.
Okay, the dog park. We did start the tree removals there. This was items that the board had identified as, we had identified as hazardous, and the board said directed us to, we should be handling that. So we've been doing a large cleanup of the Aleppo pines in the back and some of the palm trees that are overgrown. That's ongoing right now. We have received some donations and orders for memorial plates. For the dog park, and there was an offer for a $5,000 donation from a woman who would like to donate that in exchange for naming the dog park after her deceased mother. I don't know, maybe we take that to, I don't know how we discuss that.
Committee on this or something?
Yeah. So there is that. That's a great offer. That's fantastic, but we don't. $5,000.
That's cool.
No. Anyway, cool. It's something for a great topic to discuss.
Do we want to take that? Do we want to bring that for an agenda item to discuss?
What's that? The donation
versus later.
Well, yeah, because the offers now for
we had a lot of offers.
That's going to take some in-depth discussion.
Okay. Do you want to put that on the community center workshop agenda?
Sure,
I would.
Okay. Yeah. And then this is our Discovery Bay Dog Park page. It's been up and running for I think about 3 weeks. I can't read it there, but it's 200 and something people have already joined the group and discussions. We've been posting any updates to there, and it's been, again, we've been getting some positive response from that. We also have the same and more condensed information on our website, so there is a page where you can find that on the website, as well as the memorial dedication plaques. There's a download form there, as well as volunteer or sponsorship forms. Our swimming pool project, the contracts have been signed and received. We've received all their insurances. They're moving forward with obtaining permits from the county. We do not have a start date in mind until that comes back. The Festival of Trees, here's our website for that. That information is also online. There are 18 trees and 4 wreaths decorating the community center right now. There's a sampling. You should go see them. They're amazing and beautiful. I'd like to thank Director Wiesen. This is her brainchild, and without her input and hard work, none of this would have happened. I can't believe how much work went into it, and it took a number of days and hours behind the scenes to make those trees and as beautiful as they are. It's fantastic.
Are we gonna have our holiday coffee break?
Well,
so we're gonna miss that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it's open now for viewing. People have already started bidding. The large tree at the bottom there is kind of the showcase tree. Its starting bid was $500, and somebody's already snag that. So there's a few of them that have already been getting bids, so it's nice. And we haven't, a lot of people commented on them during the election day and walked around. We had card players there today commenting. I mean, it's been, anybody who's come in has had great things to say. There is the mixer on Saturday, November 15th from 5 to 8 p.m. We hope you all join us and bring your checkbooks. Security cameras, we haven't talked about that in a while, but they are all up and running and functional and sending alerts at the community center. We have 6 total. So we have 3 that were originally done exterior, and then we have 3 that are more interior that are like drop cams, mm-hmm. real cheap cameras that work on Wi-Fi.
Can you give us an online demonstration of that and to the board at some point?
Yeah.
I mean, you should be able to do it right here at some point. We'd like to see the... how that works.
Yeah, I mean, I
at
could.
Night.
Okay, I don't know if you guys want to keep going, but I mean, I could do that later. The drop cans real simple.
Not tonight.
Yeah,
not
that's okay. It's
but
really easy.
Are we able?
But yes,
to,
I could.
Are we able to get alerts on an
yes.
iPhone?
Yes. Yes, I am getting alerts. Yes, okay. on both camera systems. Okay. Both of them send alerts.
Even at ghosts.
Yeah, okay. We got a ghost. We got a recording of a ghost. Okay.
Next.
We are also working on the boardroom relocation. We've been discussing the wireless and speaker or the electric technological needs that you guys would have over there. So that's in progress right now. Moving on to parks and landscape. Oh, there's an update on AB 719, which has to do with PG&E and approval of rates or new tariffs to do a conversion to the sodium high vapor light or
the street lights.
Yes, to LEDs. That got approved. Discovery Bay is in the first round of those changes, which would be the second quarter of 2015. They do plan to have more information in early January that I can bring back to you. For the first, it's very exciting, but really what's going to happen is we're going to get a new rate. It's going to be lower than what we're paying, but not that much lower. And portion of that is going to be going to pay back this whole program cost. After about 10 or 11 years, however long it takes to pay it back, we would have a much more significant savings. So just based on the numbers they've given me and estimating, it looks like after the LED conversion next year, we'll be saving about $4,700 a year annually on our PG&E bills, which is about 6% of our total utility cost for electric right now. After the payoff, it's forecasted to be about a $2,300 a month savings, $28,000 annually, or about 35% of our electric.
And that's just Zone 8?
Just Zone 8, sorry, yes. The
there's half our reserve depletion right there.
Yeah,
11,
well, those conversions are going to help 61
and
57 and 9 as well. I just didn't do those numbers.
So. Too little, too late.
We're going to have to stay on the board for 11 years and see if we actually get it.
Yeah.
This is just a quarterly update what you're giving us?
Yeah, so there's a lot of months. I'm sorry, I know it's a lot. I'm almost done. Contra Costa County Zones, upcoming projects. So they've, as everybody's kind of noticed, there's been a lot of things that we've been putting off in hope of the parks transfer. We finally got to a point with them where we just said we want to move forward with these projects regardless of the transfer because they've been holding on for so long. So we are working on a number of things that are going to occur within the next 6 months. A lot of tree work is going to happen, including replacements and removals of dead trees. That's starting this month, and then we'll be finishing in spring. Not consecutively, we're just stopping for the weather. Highway 4 along 57, or Zone 57, which is Regatta area, that was done already. We just did that within the last 2 weeks. We're working on bids for the playground park resurfacing, which is to convert the fiber to port in place. Mulching, that would come back before this board for approval. We're also going to be doing a mulching program where every street there is going to get mulched this winter, something we've been putting off. Tree implant replacements are occurring now, like on the corner of Point of Timber and Preston. They'll resume in spring. And then the shade structure project, we're really trying to push with the county just for them to do it instead of waiting for us to do it. They have had a number of retirements in the last 6 months, and so they're really short-staffed, but they are trying to prioritize that project for us. And then we're also working on solar lighting for the park. We're waiting on some more info that we need from Public Works with the county on environmental reports. Christmas lights are up at the entrance. They're not plugged in. Our banners and wreaths will be up and lights on before Thanksgiving break. There's been some recent vandalisms at Cornell Park, including a lot of graffiti. That came up earlier.
Regarding that.
And then I already talked about the other thing.
What's the schedule on locking the doors of the restroom at Cornell Park?
We don't lock them.
Okay, we have locks and gates and all that. I don't know why we're not locking them regularly. So it should be done dusk to dawn or something. I don't know why. We've got the gates and
we don't have staff. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We don't have staff at that time at night or that early in the morning.
We could open them up in the morning, but we don't have people. The HERT crews go home at 3:30, and
give Chris a key.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this question. What does it cost every time we have vandalism? They rip something apart and break. How many thousands do we spend on that? We could hire a security guard to lock it and unlock it.
Yeah, the Cornell vandalisms don't really cost, I mean, it's labor and graffiti remover. That's really what we're experiencing at Cornell. We did
lock it back.
No, it's all inside.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, it's a 6 foot, I think it's a 6 foot chain link fence. So yes, if they want to get over it, they're going to get over it. I mean, but the gate closing it would be
At Cornell, there's a 6 foot chain link fence.
When you walk into each side of the restroom, it does. Yeah, we in the whole time I've been here, we never used it, and we've never needed to until this last summer. I mean, we've never really had vandalism problems like we've had this last year up until now. I mean, this is not been something we've discussed.
The kids are getting worse. I mean, you're getting more and more people. I'm watching kids out in the street, and I get home at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're walking the streets. Maybe it's getting worse.
Maybe the country club's got an extra spearhead security guy that can go buy there for an extra $150 a month and go lock it up.
You'd have to contract.
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is.
But the other side of the coin is if the place is locked.
Let's put it in the workshop.
We're going to be here all night. Let's get this done.
Okay, I'm done. That was it. Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
I just
you.
Have one quick question. The archery program with the Lions Club.
Yes.
How is that going? Or?
He did not receive the, from what I'm aware of, he did not receive the donation for materials that he supplies that he needed. So the only time that we can run that program is when he can borrow the equipment from Fish and Game, which is during the summer. So that was also, that would probably been our seventh most popular class this summer. It had a lot of participants, but he couldn't continue it for lack of equipment.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
General manager's report.
Three quick items. One, when do you want to do the workshop?
Sooner the better.
Next week?
No, next week.
I think it should be in January.
Okay, so are you thinking after the first of the year then?
I'm thinking about January, like the first week, second week.
I will
coordinate that. We're working on, as Farron mentioned, the new rec guide in the newsletter. Do you have anything, any items in the newsletter that you would like to, anything that you'd like to hit, anything special that we haven't?
Yeah. My only comment, and you've heard it before, is the 211 program. That saves so many lives, and it's all free. So
can you make sure, can you do me a favor, can you forward me that information again? That would be very helpful.
It's in there.
It's in there.
I'd like to see the guide really tied to the web and the web to the guide. And so the guide, I want to make sure the domain and the website make it really, we want to push everybody to to go to the website to get their information, and so the more we can drive that, I mean, I would make it the headline of the guide, so that would be my comment.
And as you know, I will be not here tomorrow, Friday, Monday, and hopefully I'll be back early part of next week. If not, I will let you know what transpires, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, one item.
Hope to see you back next week.
Rick, if you don't mind, I've got one item, and that's the water usage for the month of October. We used 93.6 million gallons as compared to 117.1 million in 2013. Just a smidge over 20% reduction.
Good news. Thank you.
Which is double what the state is overall. State's only getting about 10% overall, so.
We're helping carry Southern California.
Yeah. Oh, did you see that article?
Are you done, Rick?
Yes, sir.
Okay, District Legal.
I do have one item. I do have a brief presentation, about 15, 20 minutes.
Perfect. Yeah. Can you text it to us?
Always good to be seen.
All done? Future agenda items? Oh, well, let's see. Committee updates? We have none. Correspondence and public record requests? Nothing. Future agenda items?
I think we've mentioned them.
Anything? Oh, this is my favorite part. Thank you for coming.